Well, good morning, everybody. My name is Andy. I'm going to talk to you for the next 2 hours. I'm going to be sitting in the same chair, and we're going to be talking about cars and tires and oil or anything else you want to talk about with related to motor vehicles. We can talk about motorhomes and cars. Electric cars we're not going to talk about because they represent such a small percentage of the cars on the road that those of us with repair shops, we don't have to deal with them just yet. Plus, the proprietary equipment necessary to talk to the car is about my mortgage payment. So, yeah, we're not going to do that. And we do tires on them, and we'll do some other small cosmetic stuff, but that's about it. So if you have a question now, 602-508-0960, 602-508-0960. We can talk about emissions or oil or gasoline. We can talk about your check engine light if you know what the code is. We can talk about you have a vibration, and that's when it's question and answer time. So I'll ask the question and you answer me, and when you answer me, it can be yes, no, or I don't know. And that makes it easy, because if you say yes and it's really not a yes, then I'm going to go in the wrong direction, and everyone's going to know that I don't know what I'm talking about. So sitting next to me right now is Art Decker. Him and I are friends in Payson, and Art and I also work on the Gila County Posse together, and we've been qualifying and shooting for the last couple of days, just practicing. But we can shoot the end of your cigarette off, but no one's willing to hold it for us. So we tease the rest of the shooters how good we are, but like I said, we're not very good. And we're as good as everybody else. Anyway, this portion of Under the Hood is brought to you by Tom at Action Auto. He's at I-17 in Deer Valley, the northwest corner. Action Auto Repair is a full-service, family-owned auto repair shop to serve the Deer Valley area in North Phoenix since 1983. So whatever your cars need, no matter if it's a vibration or a tune-up or a check engine light or refrigeration work, tire work, brake work, they can handle that. They have ASC-certified technicians as well. So they're on I-17 in Deer Valley, northwest corner. 602-508-0960, 602-508-0960. If you're outside the Phoenix metropolitan area, I'll give you a toll-free number. That's 888-960-9696. Oftentimes when we deal with car repair issues, the most important conversation we have is at the front counter. And the most difficult conversation we're going to have at the front counter is when the wife brought the car in for the husband, who's the primary driver. So he's going to tell her, and when we ask her questions, does this vibration shake the mirror, shake the seat, or shake the whole car? She's not going to know the difference. And that's okay, because we just ask for the husband's phone number and we call him and ask him. So that conversation at the front counter should be more than, what do you want or what do you need? Oh, I want you to align my car. Alignment. What else? I want you to tune it up. Okay, fine. So then almost assuredly the car's coming back, because the customer's diagnosed a tune-up and alignment going to fix his problem. And if he's right, then he wins. But he's not going to be right. So he comes back and says, you didn't fix it. And then the shop says, fix what? You told us to do an alignment and a tune-up. Well, the car shudders. Well, you should have told us it shudders, and we would have said, take us for a ride, because we didn't know that. You made your own diagnosis. We did what you asked, and now you want us to give the money back because you made the wrong diagnosis. So most of us will work with the customer, and we'll say, well, let's start all over again and take us for a ride. So we're driving down the street, and he goes, feel that? Feel that? And I say, yeah, I feel it. He goes, what is that? He said, that's an engine miss. And so I reached over, and I turned off the air conditioning controls, and I said, is it still there? And after about, I don't know, 5, 10, 15 seconds, he goes, no. I said, okay, and I turn the air conditioning back on, and I said, is it back? And he waits for a bit, and he goes, yeah. And I said, so you said that was a tune-up, and you told us to do a tune-up, and we did a tune-up, but that's not the problem. The problem is your air conditioning is low on refrigerant, and the air conditioning compressor is cycling on and off, and you misinterpret that as an engine miss, and actually most people do. But you had us working on the tune-up because you diagnosed it, but really you should have just said to us, when you drive down the road, it bucks. So that kind of stuff. Now, most of the times, the women won't make noises at the front counter for us to mimic the problem with the car, but the guys will. And sometimes, especially customers of mine that have been old customers of mine, is I'll ask them to mimic the noise just for the fun of it. And there's a couple of them that know my game, and so they won't do that. 602-508-0960, 602-508-0960. If you have a car question or a car problem, you're welcome to give us a call, and we'll do the very best we can to talk about your car problem. And like I said, it's a question and answer kind of thing. Not too long ago, there was a conversation in a motorhome world about steer tires and rear tires. And someone had been told by a repair shop that you could put steer tires, which is the two front tires, you could put those on the back as well. And I want to respectfully disagree with that, because the difference between steer tires and rear tires on a motorhome and in most trucks and stuff is the steer tires are really important, but they don't have the mud and snow capability. So they're smoother and they have less ribs. The back tires are going to be more aggressive tread because they're the traction tires. So those are the ones in mud and in snow and in rain. And those are the ones that are supposed to hold the back end of your car on the road to follow the front end of the car. So someone had said, suggested that he should put steer tires on his motorhome, and my response was, if you're going to be in low traction conditions like rain, ice, or snow, I wouldn't do that, because the tires that belong on the back of your motorhome have a slightly more aggressive tread. And as a result, that's much better. Otherwise, you're going to drive down the freeway, and the possibility exists that the back end's going to swing around and pass the front end of the motorhome because you've lost traction. So those are the kinds of things that we deal with on a regular basis. 602-508-0960. And if you're outside the Phoenix metropolitan area, you can call on this toll-free number, 888-960-9696. Speaking of tires, there is other things. 602-508-0960 is the phone number. There's a real discussion, and has been for a long time, do we plug the tire or patch the tire? Let me explain the difference. When we plug the tire, we have this small rope, and we put it on this needle with a hole in the end of it. We goober up glue all over that. We find where the hole's at. We pull the nail out, and we stick the plug through the tire. So there's two pigtails sticking out and two pigtails sticking in. And if you're really good, you spin the screwdriver, and then you pull the head back through the, and as soon as you do that, it should be pretty tight. You wait for the glue to dry. You take your dykes or your sharp knife, and you cut off the tail. You let the thing sit there until the glue dries, then you air it up to 35 pounds, normally a passenger car tire, and then you put some soap on it to see if it's going to leak. Then you go drive it, and you come back and check it again. Many of us no longer do leak or plugs in your tires. We recognize that they're very dicey. We recognize that's not what's in your best interest, and we recognize that that could kill you, because if the tire's on the back of the car and you have a blowout because of low air pressure because the plug leaked, then you're going to be swapping ends on the highway, and the back's going to be at the front, and it's going to be going backwards down the highway, and that's pretty scary. So plugging is not something that we do at our shop, and I know many, many shops will not, and I know Discount Tire won't do it either. That's the old days. That was what we did. Today, we take the tire off. First of all, we mark it, and we put a mark on the tire where the valve stem is, so when we put the tire back on, it's exactly in the same place it should be to maintain your balance. So if we don't mark the tire, we don't know how to put the tire on and how do we clock it. Well, if we have two marks, the valve stem on the wheel, and we have a mark on the tire, you just line up the valve stem on the wheel with the mark on the tire, and you're done. And so you look at the side of the tire, and you air up the tire to what it says maximum inflation, and you're done. So you're on your way. Plugging tires is really a farm kind of thing. You run over some big piece of metal and poke a pretty big hole in your tire the size of a pencil or bigger. And so you pull out your plug and your glue and you wind it all up and you stick it through and you pull it back. You wind it and kind of tie it in a knot, so to speak. Pull it back through, cut it off, and you wait and see. Then you add a little bit of air to it and hopefully it'll hold. But that's not what you're going to use on your passenger car tire, because those are they're not dependable in Phoenix heat, in Phoenix highways, in Phoenix speeds. And when they pop out, the tire goes flat real fast. So plugging a tire is not something you want to do. And frankly, I don't know that you'd find anybody in the Phoenix area that's going to plug your tire. 602-508-0960, 602-508-0960. When we come back, we're going to talk about oil. And we're going to talk about synthetic oils. And we're going to talk about which one should you use for your car. Should you use a conventional oil, which is stuff, oil that we've had since the 50s and 40s and 50s and 60s, all the way up to probably the 80s. And then we went to a semi-synthetic and a synthetic oil. So a semi-synthetic, guess what? It's half conventional and half synthetic. Now, they won't tell you it's 50-50, so it could be 60-40 or it could be 70-30. The manufacturer won't tell you what percentage of synthetic is it and what percentage of semi-synthetic. It's called semi-synthetic or conventional oil. So those are the three. Conventional oil is what our parents grew up with. Semi-synthetic was the first above standard oil, and then full synthetic is altogether different. And here's the difference. A conventional oil will hardly pull out of a can pour out of the can at about 30 degrees. A semi-synthetic will pour out of the can maybe 45, 50 degrees because it's half conventional or half grandpa oil and half synthetic. But a synthetic will pour out of the can at 40 below. So there's a big difference in cold weather coverage. Each one of those has a different number in hot weather coverage. The conventional oil will turn to a tar at about 290 Fahrenheit. The semi-synthetic will turn to a tar well over 300, and the synthetic will turn to a tar well over 500. So you go, wow, 500 degrees. But your motor's going to be a big pile of metal that's melted if you drive it at 300 degrees. So the idea that the oil will protect you to 500 degrees really means nothing, because if your cooling system fails and you keep driving the car, you're going to wipe out the motor, and that synthetic oil is not going to keep it together. So that's kind of how it works. 602-508-0960. If you'd like to join us or have a car question, you can. 602-508-0960, and we'll be back in a minute. Welcome back, everybody. Boy, let me turn that down just a little bit. Anyway, Mark Salem here, and we're talking about car and car repair stuff, and if you want to join us, you can. 602-508-0960. 602-508-0960. And the issues with cars is pretty general, but we can answer most questions, and we can talk about it. And I was sitting here talking with Art, and we were talking about ignition systems. Oh, here's the phone number, by the way, 602-508-0960, 602-508-0960. And for you ladies out there that have a car question, this is how you start it. My husband says, and then you give me the issue, and that's an easy way to do it, and then I can talk as if I'm talking to the husband, and I won't say anything that's gonna hurt your feelings. Nevertheless, working on cars is not easy and never has been easy. An automatic transmission exchange, Bill there, has been working on transmissions since Barney Rubble and Fred Flintstone got cars. That's how long he's done it. He has transitioned from transmissions that were manuals to half manuals, and then he went to the automatic transmission, the 2 speeds, the 3 speeds, the 5 speeds, and now the 8 speeds. And he has computer shifts in them where before you shifted with your right foot, and you didn't even know it, but your right foot helped the transmission decide when to shift. Those are the kinds of things that we talk about, 602-508-0960. But Phil from Transmission Exchange truly knows what he's doing, and if you call him in advance, he'll go take a ride. Don't think you're going to take him for a ride that takes 2 or 3 hours. I promise it'll happen. I promise it'll happen. You have to be able to make it happen, because you can't take Phil from his business like you can't take mine from mine and go take us for a joyride for an hour and a half while you try to make something happen. Okay, Gil, we have somebody. Who might that be?
Hey, good morning, it's Jack.
Jack, good morning. How can we help you?
Good morning. Yeah, I got a question. I noticed on this show you had mentioned you're going to talk about oil, and I thank you for that. But my question is, I drive an Ultima that takes a synthetic oil of 0-20, and I was wondering if I was to use something other than a pure synthetic, what would be the recommended level or weight of the oil?
Okay. Well, let me
synthetic, I don't even think they offer 0-20, and then obviously on a conventional, they definitely don't.
Right. Well, let's talk about both of them, okay? We'll talk about the synthetic first. It flows like a zero weight when it's cold, and there's clearly an advantage to that because it doesn't flow like peanut butter when it's cold. So your motor's going to be better protected on a cold start with a synthetic oil. It flows like a 20 weight when it's hot. And everybody thinks that they want peanut butter in their car, so they want to go with 30 weight, a 40 weight, a 50 weight. Shoot, we've had guys put gear oil 70, 80 weight in their engines because they're knocking, they're only minutes away from dying altogether, and the motor's leaking oil like crazy. So that's the guys that put the heavy weight in. Your 0-20 has an oil change interval somewhere between 8,000 and 12 to 14,000, depending on what your owner's manual is. If you go to first of all, you can't go to a conventional from the 0-20. You would probably go to a 10-30. A 10-30 would be a little.
Okay.
Keep in mind, let's talk about the 0-20. It flows like a zero weight when it's cold, and zero rate has the consistency of sewing machine oil, which means you get fast, easy protection from cold weather starts. It flows like a 30 weight when it's warm. So that's what 10-30 means.
Mm.
Flows like. You're 0-20.
Okay.
And then people get scared because of the 20, and they go, oh, this has got to be the consistency of water. Well, it is, but it still provides the protection that conventional can't and won't. So is your car new, or is it a couple years old, or how old is it?
Yeah, it's a 2018, and it's got about 99,000 miles on it.
Okay.
And I've been using synthetic since.
Okay.
I bought it.
How many, what's the intervals? How many miles on the intervals?
Usually around 10 to 12.
That's good. 10 to 15 is good.
Yeah.
So let's do the math. How many 3,000 mile oil changes are in 100,000 miles? I think they're 33, right? 33.
Yes. Well,
you've had 10. See the difference? So.
Yeah, big difference.
Yeah. And let me ask you this. If you're going to put oil in your car and you want to get the best fuel economy and the best power, are we going to put in sewing machine oil or are we going to put in peanut butter?
Sewing machine oil.
Yeah. And really, that's the whole issue. I've been trained by Valvoline. I've been trained by Chevron. And I've taken what they've taught and added a little flavor to it and added some descriptive words, because with radio you can't see me waving my hands and all that stuff, but it helps a lot when you can put something in their mind about what it is. So there is nothing behind the old adage is once you start synthetic, you got to stay with synthetic. That's a lie. The motor doesn't know what oil you put in it and it doesn't care. So if you did want to go back to from a synthetic to a conventional, and then you decided I don't want the 3 to 5, and some guys will stretch you to 7 on a conventional oil, you can go back to a synthetic and your motor's not going to care.
Okay. Perfect.
Okay?
Well, I appreciate it.
And what year was it your car?
2018.
And you already got 100,000?
Yeah. My wife has a 2014, and she's got about 79,000 on that one.
Yeah, I mean, that's 5 years. You're doing 20,000 miles a year. That's not too bad, right?
Right, and so you're right. And I used it most when I was working. You know, I was putting on 25,000 to 30,000 to get to work and stuff. So now that I'm not, I'm not putting much oil on it, much mileage on it at all.
Okay, so you're retired now?
Yeah.
Okay, so the only place you're going to go is to the golf course, the bar, or your girlfriend's.
That's it.
Thanks for laughing.
Okay.
You can feel, you know, I'm feeling a little ornery today, right? So
that's good.
If your wife was there, I hope she's laughing with you and I. But nevertheless.
Well, she's here, but she's on the other side of the sliding glass door watching the news.
Okay, all right. All right, well, Jack, thank you. Hopefully I've given you good guidance, but I think that's good advice, and certainly it's in line with my training with Chevron and Valvoline, okay?
Okay, thank you.
Thank you. 602-508-0960, 602-508-0960. If you have a tire problem, let's talk about tire inflation. The side of the tire says maximum inflation is 35. But the sticker on the door says that these are 30-pound tires. I want 30-pound tires in it. So what do you use? Do you use the 30 PSI or the 35 PSI? Which one do you use? There's a lot of discussion about this, and all the gray-haired, hairy-chested guys are always arguing about this. But there's a simple answer to this, and I'm not going to tell you what it is until after the break. In about 4 minutes, I'll tell you, 4 or 5 minutes, I'll tell you what the answer is. But there's good and bad about both decisions. Do I stick with the 35, or can I go down to 30 or 32? And obviously, ride has something to do with it. Fuel economy has something to do with it. The heat of the pavement and the circumstances of your environment has something to do with it. Because our tires in Phoenix are quite different than anybody else in the United States, because we bake our tires in Phoenix. It's not uncommon to have the tire have a temperature, and we use temperature guns to check this, of 130 degrees. But what we're looking for really is, the glue's coming apart at 200 degrees. So if you're rolling down the highway in your motorhome and you get gas and your wife goes around and guns your tires with a gun tire, and she says, oh yeah, they're all at about 250, you're minutes away from having a calamity. So the glue comes apart at 200. Very rarely do we see that. But sometimes in horse trailers, when the tongue is up too high, then the back tires are loaded. And when the back tires are loaded, they're head carrying more weight than they should. Voila, we got a problem. 602-508-0960. All the buttons that I'm supposed to push to make it all work together. We've got open lines available, 602-508-0960, 602-508-0960. But Cap and Bill are standing by, so I'm going to take Cap first because you called first. How can I help you?
Hey, Mark, my son just bought a 2017 Ford F-350 with a 6.7 diesel, And he's having problems with, he's got an intermittent problem, and the vehicle goes into lymph mode. Now, I listen to you every Saturday, and you have a real excellent mechanic that knows all these diesel vehicles. So I need the shop that you recommend, because he's at wit's end with this. He just bought it. He's paid like 30, and you know, he's not too happy.
Okay, let me ask you a couple questions. Is this something that comes and goes, or is it there pretty much all the time?
Comes and goes.
Okay. All right, does he have a check engine light on, the yellow light on, and it stays on? Does that happen?
You know what, I can't tell you that, because he didn't give me that information.
Okay, fair enough. There's two guys that do diesels really, really well, and that's Strictly Diesel up on Pinnacle Peak Road and I-17, and his name is Nate. And I'm telling you, he's probably the wisest, the best, the most experienced diesel tech I've ever met. He is a much better diesel tech than I am. The other guy, what part of town do you live in, first of all?
Well, we're in East Mesa.
Okay. The diesel, you need somebody who works on diesels all the time, and my son works on diesels all the time, and rarely do I suggest my shop, but you can look it up. It's called Salem Boys Auto. And what you do is you call up first, and you ask for an appointment, and right now we're probably 5-6 days out. And then just explain to them that it has an intermittent problem, and that it goes into limp mode. Limp mode is this. The computer sees something it doesn't like, and it sees something like low oil pressure or no oil pressure, will throw it into limp mode. The computer's not going to let you destroy the engine. Another thing they'll throw you into limp mode is DEF, if you don't have DEF in the truck, and you ignore the fact that you should put diesel exhaust fluid in the truck, then oftentimes the vehicle going into limp mode so that you don't damage the engine or the exhaust. So let's make sure that he's appropriately feeding DEF to the vehicle, and let's make sure that he didn't accidentally put DEF in the diesel fuel. Because the two are right next door to one another, and one's bigger than the other. And actually, the big nozzle won't fit in the small one, but the small one will fit in the big one. And we see that a lot. So,
now, is there a gauge that would tell you about the depth?
Yeah, there is. It's a
It's
a meter that we're going to pull a sample out, and we're going to look at it. We're going to look at it, and we want to see a number around 32. And just my motorhome last time when I was towed in for $2,000, it had a 12 number. And 32 was the number I was supposed to have. But it wasn't really anything I had to deal with, because it was a brand new motorhome. So between Freightliner and the dealership, they took care of it. And it was just contaminated DEF, and I did go into limp mode. And limp mode means 2 miles an hour. So if you're on the freeway and you're 200 miles from home, you're gonna be home in a couple days.
Yeah, it was a little scary, because he was on the freeway and it did go into lymph mode. He didn't know what the world to do.
Yeah, and there's a lot of other things. What's going on is the computer is looking at all the parameters of the engine, and it may very well see something like oil pressure drop below a standard. And so it's going to slow you down, and then it may decide, I'm just going to shut the motor off. Or it may decide that, wait a minute, I got enough oil pressure at 20 miles an hour, but I don't have enough for 60 miles an hour. So there's all kinds of things going on, but limp mode means something's wrong, and usually it's in the fuel system or the DEF system, and it's on a 1 to 10 scale, the diagnosis is about a 6. As long as you're a diesel tech, there, it's about a 6. Okay?
Yes, sir. Thanks so much.
Oh, you're welcome, Cap. Bill, you're up next. How can I help you?
Yes, I have a 2003 AT2500 Chevy. And stereo. I was wondering if you could recommend a place that does stereos on these newer vehicles, because apparently they're locked. They got to be unlocked and then relocked.
Okay. Obviously, the Ford dealer can handle that, but I want you to call a stereo shop in Tempe called Sounds Good to Me.
Okay.
Sounds Good to Me. I also want you to call Blackwell Automotive. Blackwell Automotive. Ask for Tom and ask him if he can unlock that radio.
Okay.
So those two guys, they're the best I have to offer you. I would send you to my shop, except we don't do that, and we don't know how to do that. So Tom or Sounds Good to Me should help you, okay?
Sounds good. Thank you very much.
You betcha. When he talks about the radios locked and stuff like that, there's all these theft things out there. And if you start messing with the radio or you start doing something wrong, sometimes it'll just lock you and lock you out. There is a special, and I make fun of this, but just go with me on this. what you have to do is you have to eat a half of a hot dog, and then you smear mustard all over your nose, and then you swing a dead chicken around your head 3 times, and then you drink half of a beer, and then you touch the radio, and it's unlocked. And so that's how silly some of the honk the horn, turn the key on and off, open and close the passenger door. Those kinds of funny things appear in some of the older models, and you'll notice he had a 2003, so that might as well be a Fred Flintstone built vehicle. Anyway, the lines are wide open, 602-508-0960, 602-508-0960, and we'll be right back.
Hi, it's Jim Ryan, General Manager.
Welcome back, everybody. 44 minutes after the hour of 10 o'clock. My name is Mark Salem, and every Saturday we're here from 10 to 12 talking about car repair problems, engine codes, what gasoline should I use, what oil should I use, that kind of stuff. And if you have a car question or if there's an argument in the family, say, for instance, dad and son don't agree on whether you should use premium or regular unleaded or what kind of tires to buy and all that other kind of jazz, then 602-508-0960. 602-508-0960 is the phone number. Gil answers the phone and he asks you what your first name is, and then he whispers in my ear that your next caller is Eric. And so let's go to Eric right now. Good morning, Eric.
Good morning. This is an electrical on an RV question. I had two in-dash cigarette lighter adapters that didn't work. New to me RV.
Okay.
It's a 2009 diesel pusher. Did some exploring, found two ground wires not clipped on the back side of the things, plugged the, prior to that, I checked all the fuses.
Okay.
Pulled them all out, looked at them, put them back in. Then I found the wires disconnected, plugged those in, both sliders worked, great. But now my AC didn't work. I pulled the AC fuse out, turned it around, put it back in, I don't know why I turned it around, just curious, and then the AC starts working.
Okay.
Now my backup camera doesn't work.
Okay. Has it ever had a windshield leak or any water inside the cab?
No, but I did get power washed right before all this started, and some overspray got into the fuses, but not saturated.
Okay. Okay. But I don't want, I want to tell you and everybody else, the fuse, if it's plugged in horizontal and it's not working, and then you take it out and you turn it around and plug it in, it doesn't make any difference.
Yes.
There's something wrong with that socket. And there's no fuse that should work like that. You can't flip the fuse
right
around. So one side of this fuse is probably corroded, and the other side isn't, and you switched it, and you got enough contact to make everything work. Now,
sure.
You said the two cigarette lighters, did they have broken wires at the back of them, or had the wires been
cut? No, just the wire clips were just pulled off the receiver.
Okay.
You know, the female side's on the wire, the male, I just plugged them back on.
Okay, and both of them now work?
Yeah.
Okay, good. So tell me real quick, what's not working right now?
The backup camera.
Okay.
The camera system for the backup and the turn signals, it's got three cameras on it.
Okay. We had that problem just the other day, and it was on a vehicle we owned. And our motorhome, usually you're watching, we tow a vehicle behind us, a Jeep. And so when you're in drive, the camera shows you the Jeep. But when you turn on the right signal, then the camera shows you alongside the right side of your coach. And we had a problem with ours, and the guy came out, and he says, oh, I know what's the matter with it. And he had three prongs at the dashboard, and the connector was connecting one and two, and he unplugged one and two and plugged them in into two and three, and that was it. Now, I want to tell you, I would have never known that. In all my days of working on cars, I would have never known that. But he knew exactly what to do. But the guys, what motorhome you got, what brand?
Tifton.
Okay. I'd take it either back to the dealer, or I would take it to a stereo shop and ask them, because the stereo shop guys install those cameras. And when you turn on your turn signal, we're going to go to a module, and when it sees that the right signal's flashing, it's going to turn the camera onto the right side of the vehicle. It could be a park neutral switch problem, because the computer now doesn't know. It could be a turn signal switch or a turn signal feed problem. And so those are the only thing you need is drive and left turn and right turn. There's only three positions for that camera in the back. This is going to be one of those things that costs $20 or $120 to find it and 50 cents to fix it. That's what this is going to be.
Okay.
All right.
I think I might get my screwdriver out, bang on a few things and see what happens.
You know, that works 30% of the time. Just shake the dash, drive down the road, put on your right turn signal. It doesn't show you the right side of the coach, and you just start beating the top of the dashboard all the way across. Have your wife do it while you're driving, or have her drive it and you do it, and just kind of beat on the dash, and if all of a sudden it comes on and goes off, then you're right. You got a bad connection. That's it. Well, good luck to you, Eric. Good
all right,
luck.
Thank you for the input.
You bet. 602-508-0960. Oh, we got somebody in queue. Who's that?
Try to say hello to Greg.
Greg, good morning.
Good morning. Hey, I called you about a month and a half ago about getting a diesel, Mercedes diesel, 3500. And you told me there was a place out in Scottsdale, North Scottsdale, called Goodies?
Yes, Goodies.
Goodies.
Yes.
Okay. That's what I was asking. I just forgot the name, so.
Okay.
Anyway.
Here's what you can do. I think Goodies retired, but I think the shop kept his name, and I think he sold it to his first-line technician. If you have any problems finding Goodies or finding, you know, the new shop, I want you to email me at mark@marksalem.com. Mark, with a K, at marksalem.com. And I will put you in touch with Goody.
Okay, because I went online, I couldn't find it anywhere.
I don't know if they've changed the name. He surprised everybody when he retired. But then he had a girlfriend and a wife, and you know how that goes. I'm teasing you. If he's listening, he's laughing his butt off right now. But no, he's a good guy, and if you can't find him, then you email me, and I'll put you in touch with him.
Okay, I got one other question.
Okay.
I got an RV and I'm looking for a towed vehicle and I'm wondering if you have any recommendations. You said you tow a Jeep.
Yeah. My wife's birthday and our anniversary are pretty close together and she wanted a Jeep Gladiator and I don't know if you know that, but we paid twice as much as we paid for our first house for the Jeep Gladiator. Twice as much. And I'll tell you right now, we spent $35,000 for our first house. And so I had a tough time with that, but she got a four-wheel drive. She got the Gladiator, which is a loaded vehicle. And then we put a tow bar on the front of it, and we haul behind our motorhome. And it's just a beautiful tow truck. But there's so many out there that are easy to convert into a neutral condition and leave the steering wheel unlocked. There's lots of people that do that. And I would probably just... if I were you, I'd go, there's got to be a four or five RV places in town that people spend the night and stuff, and I'd just drive through and start looking at what their towed, it looks like, T-O-A-D is what we call it, a towed.
Yeah.
And I'd just start looking at that, or I'd go to some of the drive shaft places and ask what kind of vehicle do they make a disconnect for the drive shaft.
Yeah.
But you can find an, I don't know, is it just you and your wife, or you got more than three girlfriends, or what?
No, just me and my wife, and, you know, I just started to look for a tow, and, you know, I'm not in a hurry, so I just wondering. I've been looking at the Jeeps.
Okay.
And the Subarus, but...
A 10-year-old Jeep, I think, is good, somewhere around there. I think any kind of a small pickup truck, like the S10, or the Toyota, or the Mazda... or any of those kinds of small stick shift Toyota or stick shift pickup trucks, those are good. You know, you run into problems sometimes depending on the alignment of the car and whether the tires will really follow the towed vehicle or your motorhome. So you want to make sure that they make all the parts necessary to hook that towed up to your motorhome. And if you're having a tough time finding the brackets, then that means probably there's not a lot of them out there because it's not a toad that people like.
Okay. Well, thank you for your information. Right. And I'll look up Goodies again.
Okay. And if, like I said, if you can't, mark at marksalem.com, and it's Mark with a C. A K. It's not a C. mark@marksalem.com. But thank you, Greg. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Bye. Bet. And do we have anybody else in line?
Lines are open.
Okay, lines are open, 602-508-0960, 602-508-0960. There's lots of good guys here in town. Auto Dynamics is Sun City's largest and most trusted source for complete automotive services. It's family-owned and operated since 1982, but Chuck Nyday, who owns it, I met him in 1968. He ran a Shell station, and him and his buddy Ken were close, and I started working for Ken, and that's where I met Chuck. So I've known Chuck since 1968. If anybody ever did have a problem with Sun City RV, or Sun City RV or their auto or their shop in Sun City, then I could call Chuck because I know. So Auto Dynamics is Chuck's shop at 99th Avenue and Grand, that's his shop, but then he also does motorhomes as well. So if you have a problem, call Chuck first and he'll take care of you. But like I said, he's been around a very, very long time. And we do have a caller. Who might that be?
Say hello to Joe.
Joe, good morning.
Morning. Hey, I got that 2019 3500 Sierra with a Duramax diesel in it. You're getting a fuel pressure sensor 2 code.
Okay. It could be a whole lot of things, but the first thing you should do is change the fuel filter.
Yep, just actually did that about 200 miles ago.
All right, is there any symptoms that go along with the check engine light?
It'll crank, but won't fire up.
Okay. All right. There's a lot that can go on. What's going to happen is the tech's going to plug in a scanner, and you're going to tell him exactly the circumstances, how to get it to not start crank, but no, it's a crank but no start is what we call it. And he's going to hook up his scanner, and he's going to have 5 or 6 screens on his scanner. He's going to be watching all kinds of stuff, and he's going to crank it over, and if it doesn't start, he'll kind of know where to start. There's the Strictly Diesel is in the north part of the city. And you can go to him. He's kind of tied up, but he's really, really good with the Fords and the GMC and the Dodges. And Blackwell's at 40th Street and Greenway. He can handle that. And I can't think of anybody else that's raised their hand. Oh, you know, Harker's Automotive, 38th Avenue and Indian School. I know they can handle that. So Harker's at 39th Avenue and Indian School, and you got Blackwell Automotive, 40th and Greenway, and then, of course, you got Strictly Diesel. Any of those guys can help you.
So I got another question with the same.
Okay.
Fuel rail pressure A and fuel rail pressure B, should they be identical?
I'm going to tell you, I don't know my answer, but I think it's going to be different because the fuel rail pressure will change whether you're at idle or you're wide open throttle. And so the demand is different, clearly different there. I'm thinking the computer wants to know that because it gives it more information to handle the fuel controls. But I also want to tell you that I'm guessing intelligently as I can, and I don't know the answer to your question with respect to 2 fuel rail pressures on your 3500 Duramax. I'm not real sure. But I know Nate would take your call, but not on Monday morning, because it's off for obvious reasons, not Monday morning. But Nate would take your call, and you could ask him, what is the difference and what should they be? Do you have the numbers in front of you?
Yeah.
Okay, give him those numbers and ask him. Just don't do it on Monday morning for obvious reasons, okay?
Who is Nate with?
Nate Strictly Diesel. Strictly Diesel.
Okay.
And he's up there on Pinnacle Peak Road. Let me see here. It says I-17 and Pinnacle Peak Road on the east side of the road, okay?
All right, thank you.
You betcha. The reason why I have 2 diesel shops that I recommend on a regular basis is because I'm trying to geographically take care of everybody. But when you really start talking about Chevy, Dodges, and Fords, there's about 3 or 4 shops in the valley that do good work, and everybody else seems to struggle with it. And we all know, all of us gray-haired guys know, we struggled with diesels when we first started learning them. Then when they put computers in them, it made it worse for us. But you have to understand the values they're giving you. And the computer, for example, would be 1 through 5. And 1 is idle and 5 is wide open throttle. But they don't want to say idle and wide open throttle, so they give you a 1 and a 5. And so you have to know that when you get the numbers and it's 3.5, you have to know the throttle is 60% open. That's what the computer thinks. And so if it's not, then it's not. 602-508-0960, 602-508-0960. One more time, 602-508-0960, and we have open lines, and we got 5 of them.
This was a...
Welcome back, everybody. 4 minutes after the hour of 11 o'clock, and we're going to be here for another hour talking about cars, car repair issues, and DEF problems, diesel exhaust fluid problems. Let me explain the DEF to you real quick. Emissions control is a very big thing on all cars and trucks, and diesels emit soot, and so that black stuff and the cloud of black smoke when they throttle apart at the traffic light, that's soot. We have a particulate filter in the exhaust, and we're going to screen that soot and keep it there. And then at a certain times, the computer keeps track of the inlet pressure and the outlet pressure. So the inlet pressure, in an exaggerated way, goes to 50, and the outlet pressure is 5. That means the particulate filter is plugged. This is in simplistic form. So at that point, the computer then uses lighter fluid, and it sprays a bunch of flammable lighter fluid into the particulate filter, which then consumes this huge fire, and all this heat consumes the carbon and sends it out as just powder. And that's what happens. DEF is diesel exhaust fluid, and it's nothing more than lighter fluid, like for your charcoal. Now, you can't use lighter fluid in your truck, in your diesel truck, but that's basically what it's all about. 602-508-0960, 602-508-0960, and we have a caller. Who might that be, Gil?
Hey, good morning, it's Gene.
Gene, good morning.
Hey, good morning. Hey, I've got a 2019 Duramax diesel, 96,000 miles on it. I was at the Costco the other day putting some fuel in it. Another guy came up with another diesel, much older. It's got 200. He was adding some fuel additive into the tank, and I asked him what he was putting in it, and he said he uses Lucas fuel additive, and he also does it with his oil. And I guess I would just want to get your opinion on that. Is it just snake oil, or is it something that actually helps prolong or extend the life of the engine?
Okay. we actually use Lucas oil for specific symptoms. So if we've got a lifter clattering, we might try some Lucas oil. If we've got a leaker, we might try some Lucas oil. But any time that you add something to your crankcase that's not specified for your vehicle, you throw the oil out of specification. And when you throw the oil out of specification, you're going to have wear where you shouldn't be. Now, sometimes the wear can be a thousandth of an inch over time. And the critical tolerances is 2 or 3 thousandths of an inch on most engines of the parts that rub together, the rod bearings and the piston rings and the crankshaft bearings and the timing chain and the cam bearings, all that stuff. A lot of people use that because their dad did. A lot of people blame, you know, high mileage diesels on, hey, I use this kind of oil or this kind of oil additive. But
what about the fuel additive?
Well, I'm not in favor of any of that. It gives you this idea that your car is going to love you and last you longer, and that's just your pure bull. That's not true, never has been true. So I'm just of the opinion that buy gas from a station that's pretty busy, fuel from the station that's pretty busy, use the oil weight that your owner's manual says to use, change it within the parameters of your oil manual. But my truck has 168,000 miles, it's a 12, and I, knock on wood, I haven't had any problems, and it's a Dodge. And it's the 6.7, and it runs like a raped ape, and it runs fast, and it pulls all my horse trailers, and it does everything I want it to. But I'm quite sure I could add fancy stuff to the fuel tank and fancy stuff to the oil crankcase. But really and truly, if this motor's going to go to heaven at 198,000, it's going to go to heaven at 198,000, no matter if I put horse urine in there. It's going to heaven. So I don't believe in that stuff.
I appreciate your opinion.
Okay, and
that's why I called.
Okay, one other thing. If you have a gas engine that's burning some oil, STP will slow that down. So you can see the difference. I got a problem. And now there's other oil or other fuel additives that absorb water. So if you think you have water in the tank, then you can get some gasoline treatment that soaks up the water and sends it out the tailpipe. So under those circumstances, yes. But to put it in because you think your car's going to love you more, I don't agree with that. Okay?
I appreciate it. Thank you so much.
You bet. 602-508-0960. 602-508-0960. I'm really just not with it today, folks. I don't know. It's just been one of those tough weeks for me. I was out in the barn yesterday, and I turned on the water in the barn, and I had some auto parts in there, and I was just kind of rinsing them off, and I forgot that I left the barn, the water running, and the next thing I knew, in the workshop next door, there's water about an inch deep. And the worst part about it is there's some big rolls of brown paper hand towels. And those were underneath the sink. And, of course, when the sink overflowed, it wiped out 4 rolls. But it almost absorbed all the water in that area, which I was kind of grateful for. But then again, my wife was mad because I destroyed 4 rolls of hand towels in the barn. So I said to her then, don't go in the barn. You're not allowed to be in the barn until I bring towels from Phoenix. And that's the deal. 602-508-0960, 602-508-0960. If you have any car questions about oil or gas, look, I'll talk about gas right now. your car doesn't care whether you use Union 76 or Exxon or Mobil or Costco or anything like that. It doesn't make any difference. Let me explain why. There's a tank farm on the east side of town, and I have been in there, and there's this guy called the Mr. Wizard, and he has this board in front of him that has all kinds of buttons. So the tanker's in there to get 8,000 gallons. Now, I'm going to exaggerate and minimize some of these numbers, but I just want to give you a feeling. So he loads up 9,000 gallons of regular gasoline, or unleaded gasoline. He's calling it unleaded. He pulls forward in the rack, and then he tells the guy, this is Chevron. And so the guy has a nozzle that's in the tank. And just for instance, don't hold me to these numbers. He squirts a gallon of detergent in there, and then he squirts 2 gallons of intake valve cleaner, and then he squirts 5 ounces of, or 5 pounds or 5 gallons, call it what you want, of a viscosity enhancer, and he does all this stuff, and then he goes, there you go, and the truck drives off, and it goes to your gas station and pours it in, and you've got whatever sign outside. I have been at that facility when they do that. Now, I don't know if it's 35 gallons of detergent within 9,000 gallons of the truck, but let me ask you a question. How much do you think you're going to get of the 35 gallons in a 9,000-gallon load? So people ask me about fuel, and I'm telling you what I do, what my wife does, what my kids do. We hunt the cheapest. We have Gas Buddy on our phones, and you can look and find the cheapest gas around wherever the heck you're at, and that's what I do. And if I have to drive a mile or 2 miles out of my way to save 3 or 4 cents, heck, my truck takes about $140 worth of fuel. And so I can save some money if I can save 4, 5, 6 cents. So that's kind of how it works. We got a caller. Who might that be?
Say good morning to Kevin.
Kevin, good morning.
Good morning. Taking my call.
Oh, sure. No problem.
Hey, I have a 2004 Honda Element with 80,000 miles on it, and I was driving around, running the air conditioning, pulled in a parking spot, and went to shut the car off, but before I could, the air conditioning completely stopped working. No fan or compressor turning.
Okay. If I were working on your car, first thing I'd do is get out a 12-volt test light, and I'd check both sides of all the fuses. I would make sure that one of the fuse panels isn't hidden. It's not uncommon for a car to have 2 fuse panels. So you can have one in the glove box, and then you can have one in the kick panel on the driver's side. That's kind of what I'm looking for. And so I'm going to look for any burnt fuse. If I got a clutch burnt fuse, then what I'm going to do is just put a meter in there, turn on the clutch, and it's going to go to 1,000. It's going to go to ground, and I'll go, okay, well, I got the clutch that's shorted. It's not very likely that the fan speed and the compressor operation are on the same circuit. Usually they're different circuits. So the compressor is on one circuit, so when you go to AC and you push the button, it automatically turns on the clutch on the compressor, which then activates the compressor. The blower motor is going to be on something different, and then there's going to be a low pressure and a high pressure switch on the AC that's going to interrupt the service of the AC if they see a problem. So you can see that there's a lot going on there. But do you have a little 12-volt test light that looks like an ice pick with a pigtail on the end of it?
Oh, I have a couple of them.
Okay, so I'm going to start the car up, and I'm going to turn everything on. And I'm going to look at the fuse panel cover that will tell me what each fuse is. And I'm just going to go back and forth on the same fuse. I'll hit the left side of the fuse and the right side of the fuse if you have plug-in fuses. I think you have plug-in fuses, but you could have... Okay, and so you're just going to go back and forth on it, and then once you find the fuse blown, you can do what everybody else does, pop that fuse out, grab it, and pop it in. More than likely, it'll pop too. And so at least you know you got a dead short in that circuit. And at that particular point, usually the description of the fuse will give you an idea. It could be the AC fan, which is in front of the radiator, to help you with your air conditioning. It could be the blower motor underneath the dash. Or it could be the compressor operation, so you'll have to just kind of look for that. But this isn't rocket science. Okay. Most of us in the industry won't have any problem finding out what the problem is within the first 15, 20, 30 minutes. We'll have a diagnosis.
Okay. All right. I've tried a handful of this as well as visited one of your shops that you recommend on your list, and they struck out.
Is it still not working?
Yeah. So, you know, and I said, you know what, it wasn't that bad yet, you know, meaning hot wise, and I can get a couple more weeks out of it before I bring it back to him so I can get a couple things done. But that, I'll go through what you suggested, and it makes a lot of sense that one item could cause all of this not to work so that we don't hurt anything while one item is working properly.
Yeah, but don't hold me that one fuse is going to run all that stuff, because the amperage is going to be more. The most you can have in there is probably a 20 or 30 amp fuse. And the chances are that if you put the clutch coil together and you put the blower motor together and then you put the condenser fan together, that's more than the fuse can handle. So that's the reason why I'm thinking. Let me ask you what part of town you're in. Certainly you should go back to the shop that started this, but plan B, what part of town do you live in or work in?
Well, again, East Mesa, and I went to our friends in East Mesa.
Okay.
And I love them. They're great. They're honest, straight shooters. They let you work on your car, and then they fix what you didn't do right, or they'll tell you what's wrong, and, again, let you work on it, bring it back in.
What did they say? Did they say, we never found the problem, or did they say, we found the problem, but we can't figure the cause?
We couldn't figure out what the problem was, but we need to put in a blower fan and see if we can continue from there.
Okay. And what I'm taking from that is that we've got a blower motor that's drawn too much amps, and maybe you have a whole lot of you got 80,000 miles on your element. That's not a lot, but you also said it was an 04, which puts us at 20 years old. And so they're saying, we got an abnormal reading on the blower motor, and we'd like to go ahead and just replace the blower motor because it can wipe out the blower rheostat, and it can also cause a lot of havoc within the air conditioning and the blower, and obviously with the blower motor. So it controls a whole lot of stuff, and then it could be on the same circuit as the condenser fan. I think what I'd say to them is, hey, Brian, is this something that we just wait until it gets easier to find? Or if there's an educated guess, would you give me that number? I think that's a good place to start the discussion.
Excellent. I appreciate that information.
All right. Good luck, Kevin. Thank you very much. 602-508-0960, 602-508-0960. We're going to take a break, and in about 3 minutes, 3.5 minutes, we're going to come back and pick up the phones. Welcome back, everybody. My name is Mark Salem, and every Saturday we're here talking about cars from 10 to 12. If you'd like to join us today, right now, you can, 602-508-0960. We have 4 lines available. So if you have a discussion between husband and wife, if you're arguing between the two of you about this or that, or the manual says this, or the guy down the street says that, then, you know, give us a call, and we'll do the best we can to determine who's right and who's wrong. And sometimes you're both right. Let's go to Bob. Bob, good morning. How can we help you?
Morning, Mark. Have you driven a Dodge T-Rex pickup?
No, I haven't.
Okay. I was just wondering.
Why, are you thinking about buying
like
one?
In my dreams. But I just wonder. I just like to hear what it's like to do. It's got, what, 740 horsepower or something?
I mean, we own a couple of cars that are a little bit heavier horsepower than that. And it's an expensive truck, I'm guessing, and it's supercharged or turbocharged, right?
Yeah, right. It comes after.
Okay. It's probably got a top speed of about 160, 180, something like that. It's got some giant motor and a big blower or a bunch of turbos, twin turbos on there. You know, those cars are really nice, but here's what happens. People buy them, and they are hot rod heavens, and they drive them like little old ladies and little old men. And in the event that somebody wants to try to race them down the on-ramp of I-17 on a Sunday morning, but really and truly, that car has no purpose in the world today. Nothing. And I tell you, I have a 2006 Z06 Corvette with twin turbos, and I think it has 21,000 miles on it. Do you know what I mean? Nobody wants to drive it because it's really not fun to drive it, and everybody else wants to race you. And, of course, the guys in the family are willing to accommodate them, but the women don't like that at all, especially if they're riding in the passenger seat and they have a stun gun. So it's one of those things that you – there's some cars and trucks today that are just built. But I think, on one hand, we're using the same amount of fuel, but we're giving you a lot more ponies. We're giving you a lot more takeoff, a lot more power. We're giving you a lot more because we're advancing the timing. We're having you use premium and all that other kind of stuff. but I've not heard of a T-Rex. I'm sorry. Is it a pickup truck or is it a hot rod?
Yeah, it's a Dodge. It's just the regular Dodge, and it says T-Rex. It's kind of subtle. It's not like the Raptor where they got all the badges and stuff.
Uh-huh,
it just says TRX on the side of it, and it's Dodge's competition with the Raptor.
Okay.
You know? And I mean, not to mention it's an off-road vehicle, so you take something heavy like that off-road, and you think you're in the Baja 1000, you know, and you're just trashing it.
You're going to tear it up. They want you to think that it's capable of the Baja, but it's not. And so people are going, but on the other hand, that's the reason why we buy four-wheel drives over two-wheel drives, because we're macho and we got a lot of hair on our chest and we want to be able to go through the river sometimes. When we see the guy in front of us go through with a Subaru four-wheel drive, then it's a lot easier for you to take your four in the same footprint that he crossed it. So there's a lot of that kind of stuff. But there's a lot of cars and trucks that are just useless for mom and dad and for me and my wife. They're not
sure.
Something that we'd buy. Okay?
Yeah. Thanks, Mark.
Oh, you bet. It's a situation where the car has to meet your needs. Now, my wife has been driving Fords for a very long time against my better wishes. And she has Explorers, and she just had an Edge. She had an Edge for 140,000 miles, and then she got an Explorer and bought it from one of our customers that had low miles on it, and we had all the maintenance records, and she just passed that on to our first grandson that got his license and stuff, and then she bought this Jeep. The idea is that she doesn't really care about how fast it goes or anything like that. The Jeep serves her purpose. She goes junking a lot. And the Jeep had a bed on it, but it had a slide across the bed. And then when you locked the tailgate and you pushed the button, it locked the tailgate and no one could open the slide, the bed cover, and steal stuff from her. And that's the reason why she bought a Jeep. Never mind it's a four-wheel drive. And never mind she had her son, which is my son too, had him put all kinds of fancy lights and tires and wheels on it and fancy exhaust and all that kind of stuff. Never mind about all of that. She's just real happy with the Jeep. Who's on the phone?
Say hello to Doug.
Doug, good morning.
Hi, this is a real kind of a weird call, and it is, but I drive Uber from about 3 o'clock in the afternoon until, well, 1 or 2 in the evening. So I go through the sun transitional phase where people they forget it's dark out and they don't turn their lights on. And so, you know, I'm just driving. What else do I have to do? So I get behind them and I flip them the light, you know, the highlight, the brights, and just so they turn them on. And sometimes they do, sometimes they don't. And sometimes I drive up to them and I see that their headlights are on, their taillights aren't. And I'll tell you, from just where I am, which is certainly not all over the place all the time, just where I am, I bet you I see 10, 12, 15 cars a night, newer cars, their taillights don't work. And I yell at them, and, you know, if they roll down their window, most don't, but the taillights don't work. Is that a common problem?
No.
Have you heard of
it? No, and there is no common repair for taillights. Typically, you got a fuse for the taillights, and it's not hooked to the headlights. The headlights are on a relay where they'll come on and off. It'll be on a device that when it gets hot, it shuts the headlights off, but then it cools off and turns the headlights back on. So they have a word for that, and I can't remember what the word for it is. But
it's
as far as the headlights are concerned, when you said that, unfortunately, you're behind them, and you know that they have their high beams on, and when you flash yours, I would take that as go to the side of the road, pull over, let me go past you. That's what I would take to flash. Coming at the person with the high beams, you flash your high beams, I think universally somebody's going to say, I know what you're talking about. And you're saying, I got my high beams, then they look down, they see the blue icon, and they turn off their high beams. But, you know, as far as the taillights are concerned, if you're going to flash your lights, I don't think that they're getting the message. But you could pull over next to them, and it's a nice, like, roll the window down and say, you got no taillights. And then just wave at them and drive away. But, yeah, I honor you because you're on the road a lot, that you're looking at for other people. But I can't help you with their response. 602-508-0960, 602-508-0960. Welcome back, everybody. 34 minutes after the hour of 11 o'clock, and we had a caller who also drives Uber, and he said he's pretty sure that the front running lights are on the same circuit as the tail lights on the cars. And because the other Uber driver said he finds lots of people with no tail lights. The other Uber driver saying, I think the tail lights are hooked to the front lights, not the headlights, but the front lights, which are typically yellow, driving lights, parking lights. And it's true. Most cars, when you blow the fuse in the back, you lose the running lights on the front. Now, everything from the middle of the car backwards has to be red, and everything from the middle of the car frontwards can be white to yellow. That's the way the law says. So that's the reason why you don't have any red lights in the front of your car, or otherwise you'll see red lights behind your car, and they'll explain to you you're not allowed to have red to the front. Let's go to the phones. John, you're first. How can I help you?
Yeah, I have a 2007 Lincoln Town Car with 4.6 with the plastic manifold. I replaced the manifold with a Duralast, which I think is a Dorman. I replaced all the O-rings on the fuel injectors, the heater tube underneath the manifold O-ring. I cleaned the throttle body and the plenum and assembled everything, and the car will start. The tack will go up to 1,000, then it'll fluctuate to like 500, bounce back forth, maybe go to 2,000 and back down. There's no tether response. It's electronic throttle body.
Okay.
So what do I do? Is it something, can that be recalibrated? Did I break it? I did move the baffle when I cleaned the throttle body.
Well,
so
I can't
what
tell
did I do? Did I screw something up?
Well, no. This is something that somebody has seen before, and most of us have software that allows us to go in and just type in your symptoms and figure out. I think because your problem is so widespread, I think you got a vacuum leak someplace. A bad vacuum leak at the PCV valve, at the EGR valve, at the intake gasket. A bad vacuum leak will cause the symptoms that you talk about. And so hopefully it's an exterior one. It could even be the gasket on the bottom of the throttle body. It could be a vacuum line you forgot to plug in. There's just so many things. To see if you have a vacuum like, you can buy 3 feet of heater hose, stick one of it in your ear, and then just wave it around an idling motor. And you'll hear the motor running, and then when you get near a vacuum leak, it'll go and you'll be able to hear it. Run that vacuum line. Run the vacuum line. You know, you need probably 3 feet of 5/8 heater hose. Stick one in your ear and just go along with the four sides of the manifold. And if you find something there, then you're going to have to take it apart. But to be honest with you, on a 1 to 10 scale, this is a 2 or 3 for some old gray-haired guy to figure out. I don't know what the repair is going to be, but the diagnostic's not going to be that tough.
Okay.
What part of town do you live in?
Well, actually, I live North Phoenix. I'm near Kurtz on Bell Road.
Yeah, you just go in there and tell Kurtz or Jeremy that Mark said that they don't have a chance in hell in fixing this, but I thought I'd send you there anyway. And Kurt and his staff are very capable of handling the diagnosis for this. You might want to take care of the repair, but the diagnosis is what you need more than anything else.
Okay. Now, the car will stall after 30 seconds, so I'm not sure I'm going to have enough time unless somebody keeps... It's going to hurt the car if somebody sit in the driver's seat and start it every time it stalls, because you can't give it gas. It's a pedal dead.
Okay, well, there's a throttle position sensor on the pedal and on the linkage. It has to talk to the computer, and if it doesn't talk to the computer doesn't know that you've hit the throttle, so it's not going to increase the fuel delivery or the on time with the injectors. On a scale of 1 to 10, this is not that difficult at all. I want you to know that sometimes these come in, and they have well-meaning owners, and it takes us an extra hour or two to find the problem that had they not messed with it, we had found right off the bat. And so you're going to say, what's your diagnostic charges? Is it an hourly thing or is it by the block of time? And call me when you get that, or call me when you get done with that, and then give me an estimate for the repair. The best you can hope for is a small vacuum leak or a vacuum leak. The worst is somebody's going to have to pull the manifold off again. Those are the two worst things, I think, okay?
Okay, great. Thank you very much.
You're welcome. Keith, you're up next.
Actually, you just had Keith, so John was the last call.
Oh, okay. I just had Keith, so Gosh darn it. See, that's what happened. I have a guest in the studio, and he's laughing and tickling me at the same time. His name is Art, and so I lose track of everything. But 602-508-0960, we still have time. We're going to have 20 minutes when we get back. No, we're going to have more than 20. Yeah, 20 minutes, about 20 minutes. So if you have a car question, 602-508-0960, 602-508-0960. Welcome back, everybody. If you have a car question, then we have about 15 minutes left in the show, so you're welcome to give us a call, 602-508-0960, 602-508-0960. And I want to tell you about a shop in Mesa that has history that few of us have. When you talk about Thompson's Auto Repair and Towing in Mesa, Brian and Thelma are married, but each one of their respective families got started in Mesa in the 60s and 70s with gas stations. One of them was like a Union 76 and one of them was a Shell station. These two young people, Brian and Thelma, husband and wife, they grew up smelling gasoline on the dinner table. They grew up with their dad coming to, you know, to their school stuff with grease in his fingers and stuff like that. They've been around a long time. Brian handles the shop. His wife Thelma handles the front counter. And like I said, they are just really the salt of the earth and really, really good people. So if you live in Mesa, unfortunately for you, the only place in Mesa I can vouch for is Thompson's Auto Repair and Towing. They're on Main Street just east of Stapley. Main Street's just east of Stapley. I admit there's other good shops in Mesa, but I get to pick and choose which ones I talk about on the radio. And I feel very comfortable with Brian and Thelma, and I know that they're not going to take advantage of anybody, and they know how to fix their own problems. That's the bottom line. So when it comes to car repair and lots of other things, it's really important for you to know we expect you to give us the symptoms. Let me give you an example. Art, who's sitting next to me, is a friend of mine, and his wife has an Equinox. And she has a tailgate that sometimes will open or won't open. And she's got two or three different ways to open and close the tailgate. The first one is a key fob, and that will open and close the tailgate. Then there's a button on the driver's door. On the down low, and she can push that to open it or push it to close. Then there's a sensor underneath the truck or car on the left side, the driver's side back corner, that you can swing your foot underneath. Now, she is frazzled beyond belief because this thing has been so... So we were over there the other day, and Art was going to put a tie because now the thing won't shut. So Art was going to use a plastic tie to go between the one, the latch, and the other one, and she would have nothing to do with that. She says, I am not going to drive a car that's held together with a tie. Her name is Chris, too, by the way. So she's just adamant. And they've been to a dealer a couple of times, and they've had this worked on and so forth and so on. So I said to Art, bring it by the Payson place, and let me just take a look at it. So I made a couple of phone calls, and I was talking to this old grizzly guy, and he says, this is what I want you to do. And he tells me something to do. And I said, okay, I'm going to try that because that makes all the sense in the world. So when Art shows up, I disconnect both battery cables. Now, when we do that, we lose all the seat settings and the clock settings, and you lose lots of that kind of stuff. But that's just tough poo-poo. We're going to have to do that to see if we can fix your car. Now, after I disconnect both cables, now listen to me carefully. I've touched the two cable ends together, and I use a short jumper lead with alligator clips. I am not touching the battery cables together. That causes the battery to blow up on you. I've disconnected the cables. I've hooked the jumper between the two of them. Or you can touch them if they're far enough, close enough together. You can touch the two cable ends together. And I did that numerous times. Then I put the positive back on the battery. Then I put the negative back on the battery. And ching, chang, it works perfectly. Absolutely perfectly. Now, we have three opening mechanisms. We have the switch down on the door. We have her key fob, and then we have that leg wave. I say to Art, you got to tell Chris that she has to just use the switch on the door. If she needs that hatch open, as she gets out, push the switch. So Art and I tested for like 7.5 hours, on and off. And then we check the foot, and we don't like the foot, so we tell her, don't do the foot, and don't do the key fob, just use the button on the door. And Art tells me, so far, so good, but she's only 24 hours into her 30-hour warranty. So we'll see if that's going to last. What I did was, is I brought the car to its knees, while touching the battery cables, disconnecting them and touching the battery cables. You are discharging all the capacitors. You are taking that entire electrical system back to the ground the way it was before they even put the battery in the car at the factory. You're losing all your radio stations. You're losing your iPhone. What is that called? Hands-free. You're going to lose all that kind of seat mechanism, seat settings. You're going to lose everything you've set up. So you're going to have to reset all that stuff up. But that's what worked. Now, I don't know how long that's going to work because some of the repairs didn't last very long, according to Art and his wife. But I think we've got it. And so we've asked her, please just use the button on the door. And that's kind of where we're at. But that's the kind of electrical stuff. I remember one time I talked to this helpline, and the guy goes, you're going to have to get a chicken, and you're going to have to kill the chicken, and then you're going to have to wave him around your head 3 times and cluck. And I said, I think I need another advisor, because what you're telling me is just craziness. And he starts laughing, and he goes, well, sometimes I can get away with it, sometimes I can't. He taught me that. He says, this is what I want you to do. So that's what I did back then, and it worked beautifully. So if you have a problem with your car, listen to me one more time. Disconnect both battery cables. Have a towel over the top of the battery. Set the two battery cables apart from one another. You might have to take the bolts out of the center of the battery cables, but you're going to identify. Then you're going to use a jumper lead with 2 alligator clips, and you're going to hook one to the metal part of the cable, not the battery, the cable that went to the battery, and you're going to hook the other end of the alligator to the other cable. If you hook that jumper wire to the battery, the positive and negative, you're going to have a real fireworks show. So I don't want that. That's why I took the battery cables off. So if you want to start the car over, so to speak, then that's how we do most all the cars, is just simply touch the cables, the disconnected cables, touch them together, and we start all over again. Some people, when you do that, they don't like that because they have to reprogram their radio stations and their seat positions and their air conditioning and all that kind of stuff. But, you know, that's just one of the byproducts of this. And so far, Art is here. He's not got any bruises on him. He doesn't have any baseball bat hits on him. And he doesn't have any bullet wounds in him. And so I'm thinking, Art, she's still happy? Yeah, he's yelling happy. Yes, she's happy, happy. So, anyway, that's what car repair is typically. Do we have any callers, Gil?
Nope, lines are open.
Lines are open, so you got a few minutes if you'd like to call us, 602-508-0960, 602-508-0960, and we can handle your car questions. And if you don't want to call in and be on the radio, then you can use my email address, mark@marksalem.com. My last name is Salem, like the cigarette. So mark@marksalem.com. Tell me about your problem. Tell me the year, make, and model of your car and the miles. And then give me a phone number, because I'm going to have some questions, and I don't really think it's productive for us to sit there and have 15 different exchanges over the Internet in emails. So I like to talk to you, and I call from a block number, and if you'll answer the phone, the very first thing I'm going to say is, this is Mark Salem. I'm calling you about your car problem. That way you won't hang up on me. Most people don't even answer that kind of a call, but in advance, the shop will typically tell you that. Working on cars is fun. Working on cars is a challenge. And with the new cars today, everything is a number. And I'll give you an example. The throttle position sensor tells the computer what your throttle's doing. I want you to pretend, and it's really the truth, that everything in your car is 1 through 5 volts. So if the car is idling, it's typically 0.8 of 1 volt, somewhere around there. Wide open throttle on a 1 to 5 scale. Wide open throttle is 4.7, 4.8, 4.9, and sometimes 5.0. So the computer watches everything, and there are sensors that report to the computer that tell it what's going on. If there, when your car is idling, it has 18 inches of vacuum. The minute you touch the gas, the vacuum drops, and the MAP sensor or the airflow sensor will tell the computer, he just hit the throttle. But the computer already knows I hit the throttle because I was idling at 18 inches of vacuum, 17 inches of vacuum, and then I just mashed the throttle to the floor and the vacuum went from 17 to 0. The computer knew that instantly. So that's kind of how it all works. It works off of a 5 or an 8 volt reference system, and everything. So in a simple way, 1 is 10 miles an hour, 2 is 20 miles an hour, but really that's not how it works. But it's in a simplistic way. Your throttle pedal is typically 5 volts, and 5 volts, the idle is 0.8, 0.9, 1.0. You just set it wherever you need to set it by RPM, but the range could be 8, 9 to 1. Wide open throttle is going to be pretty doggone close to 5 volts or 8 volts. Don't ask me why some of the cars are 1 through 5 and some of the cars are 1 through 8. I don't know. It's the same reason why we can't even agree on what some of the parts in the car are called. But that's kind of how it works. We're just looking. So when we look at a scanner, then we know the difference. When I'm sitting there and looking at the scanner and the scanner shows me of a circulating or an up and down voltage reading of what I know is about 35 miles an hour, and I'm sitting in the car and the door's open and my foot's outside, I know we're not doing 35 miles an hour. But for some reason or another, that's what the scanner says. The scanner doesn't tell you how to fix your car. It tells you where the area of the problem is. And we've got a caller. Who might that be?
Say hello to David.
David, good morning. How can I help you?
For us people that work on our cars from time to time, what is a better resource than a children's book?
To be perfectly honest with you, I would just use Google. Just formulate your question. You know, what kind of CO reading should I have out of a 1985 Oldsmobile 88 with a, you know, the V8 motor? You can find lots of good information, but you need to follow a couple of the search patterns. So when you search it and you have 6 results, you need to look at all 6 results, and 4 of them will have the same information. Then there'll be some guy out here in Never Never Land, and then you got this other guy over here in Never Never Land. So you're looking for the majority that agrees. And so, but I also want to tell you that all of us that own all of us that own car shops, we understand that there's a lot of people that want to work on their cars. We don't object to it, but this is what we say: we're happy to diagnose and guarantee our diagnosis, but we just don't know how much it's going to cost. So I'm going to bid you at $250, which is $125 an hour, but I'm not going to use that much money. I feel pretty confident I'm going to get it early, but I'll stop at that point and call you and say, I need another half an hour. I'm really close. I've got a 5-volt reference that's not talking to me, so I need to find out where that wire's broken. That's what happens. But the other thing that you can do is you can just punch in the code, and the code will tell you this is a fuel system problem. You have number 8 injector is not opening and closing. And so you have to know that it could be the clip and the 2 wires that go to the top of the injector. So you have to be smart enough to check it. Now, we have these specialty tools that we plug into that harness. We start it up, and that light better flash. If it doesn't flash, then that circuit's down. So even though everybody else wants to replace the injector, replace the valves, replace the air system, the mass airflow sensor, we're more interested in seeing the power fluctuate for at idle and wide open throttle. We want to be able to see that. And so
my next project is I need to change the lower control arms for my 2008 front wheel drive Camry.
Okay. That really isn't that big of a deal. I think they're going to unbolt from the frame. They're triangles, so they're going to unbolt from the frame, and then you're going to knock them off the lower ball joint on the spindle assembly. And then you're going to have it aligned after you're done, but those aren't really...
Right. If the car has 165,000 miles on it, should I also just go ahead and change the struts for the while I'm at it?
No, because there's no duplication of labor there. You know, if you were already going to have to take something off to do this, then yes. But no, then I don't agree. That's what gas stations and shops tell everybody. Well, if we're going to do this, we might as well do this. There's rarely a savings associated with that. Anyway, David, I got to run because I'm only 13 seconds away from saying goodbye to everybody. But my email is mark@marksalem.com. If you have a car question, you can email me that and give me your phone number. I'll call from a blocked line and then we'll talk. So that's again 60. I'll see you next week.
This was a paid program and was provided.